are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Friday, August 5th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. So casual, we didn't even play the Casual Friday intro. That's how casual this Friday is. And like most Casual Fridays, when we're lucky, Cliff Schechter will be here today to discuss the week that was and is. Also on the program today, Andy Kindler. Joining us to discuss the state of comedy, the state of the state, if you will. Also on the program today, good employment numbers. Nah, we're not anywhere close to where we should be, but good employment numbers today. Meanwhile, is Paul Ryan going to spend more time with Eric Cantor's family? And Clinton, still up in the polls, Florida, Georgia. Will the election be the easy part for Hillary Clinton? Donald Trump continues his spiral down. Also, his businesses also running into problems. And Sean Hannity, ladies and gentlemen, is pissed. Meanwhile, Todd Akin says that Donald Trump is a breath of fresh air. And reports that the FBI egged on the Draw Muhammad shooters. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, let's first, we got to play this sound. This is pretty amazing. What we're seeing in the Republican Party is just this massive, massive crack up. And we'll talk about this with Cliff a little bit, because there's also something going on in the Democratic Party that I don't think we're going to see until after the election. We see hints of it, but and we have talked about it on this program. Maybe sideways a little bit. But we will talk about that. But what's happening in the Republican Party is absolutely fascinating. It's been happening for some while. And like I've been describing it for years now, it's really what we have in the Republican Party are two different companies, maybe three, maybe four, but in the same industry. So in other words, it's Coke and Pepsi in the soda industry in the Republican Party. And the ideology is the same. It's just the channels for financing are different. The way they make their money is different. And there's some slight difference at the margins, perhaps. Whereas Paul Ryan certainly will kowtow to racists. In other words, he'll say stuff like, what that guy said is racist, but I'm still going to support him. As opposed to just saying the racist thing to get support, like his opponent is doing in Wisconsin. We'll get to that story in a bit. But just to give you a sense of the fracture in the Republican Party and how sort of, and it's fascinating because in some ways it's made it very unpredictable. There was a, there's a clip. We will play this. It is a, it's an 11-year-old boy. His name is Matthew Schricker. He's from North Carolina. I probably even shouldn't say his last name. The right-wingers are probably going to. But, and it's unclear. I'm still not even clear, like, who benefits from this comment, really. But it is a great comment, which just goes to show, like, the different cross currents. Now, I happen to think if we get Donald Trump as president, we're going to basically get Mike Pence's political agenda, which is really basically the Republican agenda, with the added value of just a little bit more explicit racism, a little bit more explicit bigotry, and then on the foreign policy level, a complete destabilizing, you know, like sauce, if you will. But here is Matthew Schricker asking a question of Mike Pence, which seems to have Mike Pence a little bit stumped.
Governor Pence, my name is Matthew and I'm 11 years old and I've been watching the news lately and I've been noticing that you've been kind of softening up on Mr. Trump's policies and words. Is this your role in the, is this going to be your role in the administration?
What's your name, son?
Matthew.
Matthew. What did you say that I've been doing?
You've been kind of softening up on his words.
Let me tell you, Matthew, number one, this boy's got a future. Nicely done. Let me tell you what, I couldn't be more proud to stand with Donald Trump, and we are shoulder to shoulder in this campaign, my friend. I promise you. But sometimes, you know, what I've learned, Matthew, and you'll learn it when you're governor of North Carolina. I'm not kidding about that. Is you know, sometimes things don't always come out like you mean, right? And Donald Trump and I are absolutely determined to work together. We have different styles. You might have noticed that. You know, I said at our convention, I said, you know, we nominated someone who larger than life, known for charisma, so they wanted to kind of balance the ticket. So somebody posted on the internet a picture of me on a motorcycle, and we were leading the annual governor's ride in Indiana, and underneath it, it said, "Born to be mild."
So there you have it. Mike Pence just basically walking behind Donald Trump and picking up his poo, like one would, you know, after like a elephants going down a parade or something like that.
So humiliating.
Yeah. I got to say, credit to Pence. He was very quick in trying to, he was smart, went immediately to the self-deprecation and without really actually answering the question. But good for Matthew Schricker. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, the great Cliff Schechter. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Folks, it's Casual Friday. So casual that I'm convinced that... do you have it? Oh, I have it. Okay. So casual, ladies and gentlemen, that we almost were too lazy to play this.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Cliff Schachter. Hello, Cliff, how are you? Oh, excuse me. Try that. Let's try that again. Hello, Cliff. How are you?
Have you unmuted me?
Yes, we unmuted you. I'm sorry about
that. Oh, you're kind. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I feel like I was at the Democratic convention like 6 to 8 months ago. It is.
This news week has been like a month.
Have you seen
the thing
I
was saying to people
like
beyond
before?
The politics of Donald Trump? Can you imagine, like, if he somehow crazily did get elected, I would be willing to bet you cardiac arrest would be up like 50% in this country. Like, the way this guy lives his life, constantly in turmoil and conspiracy and fighting, which seems to be the only way he psychologically can exist. I don't know how he's not dead. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how his heart's still working. And for all of us, you can just imagine, like, the fights he would pick internally, externally. Like, even if he didn't, launch a nuke or something, just, like, life is exhausting with this guy. You know what I mean? He never just shuts up and takes, like, a day or two to, like, maybe smell the flowers.
Well, but,
smoke
here's
a joint,
the thing. The funny
relax
thing,
a little bit.
The funny thing is he is the least hardworking candidate perhaps in the history of any presidential runs. I mean, just in terms of, like, I'm talking, like, objectively speaking, in terms of the way he's campaigning. I don't know, maybe
he doesn't do any work on the actual campaign. All of his output is fighting with people.
He just opens his mouth.
Insulting people, and, like, that's his output. It's not actually you're right. Doesn't do any work in the traditional sense of campaigning.
He's done less campaign stops by a factor probably of 10. Or more. I mean, and some would say, "Well, this is a tribute to his skill as a politician, perhaps." I mean, or as a freak show, in terms of getting media attention. But nevertheless, the point is that, like, he just is. He just opens his mouth and courts a disaster. It is. I mean, have you ever seen anything like this?
Wouldn't you be exhausted? I mean, just put aside, like, again, no politics. Right. I don't imagine he had the politics of Bernie Sanders, and we agreed with everything he had to say. Right. Just on a daily basis, the fights he picks, the insults he throws out, the conspiracies he makes up, wouldn't it exhaust you to be that way? Like, I feel like I've got a lot of energy and a rather large mouth, but I don't know how he does that. I really don't. I don't think the country could survive it emotionally, frankly.
I have no idea. I mean, I'm exhausted as it is.
And he's killing all of us who have to do this for a living and actually pay attention to every stupid fucking thing he says. Oh, I can say that, right? Yes. Yeah. Let's go with it. It just is exhausting. Yesterday, Sam, I got my first chance to actually be you. Not nearly as cool as you, smart as you, everything else that you are. But I guest hosted for Leslie Marshall.
I used to do that time.
It was an
slot.
Interesting experience seeing the 3-hour. I mean, I know this show is not 3 hours, but I remember when you were doing Ring of Fire daytime, what were you doing, like 14 hours of radio a day?
That's right. I would do that 3-6 slot, actually, after doing this show.
Yeah, 3 hours of radio was enough to kill me. I can't even imagine that you do this for, what, an hour and a half, 2 hours?
Jeez. Well, we do when we do the fun half, I have to say that it probably comes out to what the functional equivalent of a three-hour radio show is, because you get 22 right. minutes of ads on a three-hour radio show per hour, practically. But
right.
Nevertheless, that's, yes.
It's exhausting.
It
I
is
will
exhausting.
Say that. It's tiring. So we had to talk about Trump. You know, I mean, I mix in a few policy people on, but obviously a lot of the conversation was around Trump. And I mean, it's you know, we can get it. We have good way to segue into it. I mean, just today covering things, you know, we're going through him trying to make up what plane he saw or didn't see with the money to Iran. And the result of all of this, I mean, I know a lot of people have said, you know, oh, it could be still be the convention bounce. I think what he has done through what I like to call the jackass bounce is he's taken this huge bounce that Hillary and team got from the Democratic convention, but instead like of it dissipating, he's locked it in and doubled it down, because he chose, when all the media was paying attention to Hillary and to the Democrats, to start immediately at that moment insulting the Khan family, and it's only gone from there. So there's never been a break, essentially, of bad news about him since that week. It's just been constant. And so, I mean, the results are in. I mean, you know, I always say in polling, I don't just disbelieve what is bad for my candidate if I don't think it's true. I disbelieve what's good for my candidate. I saw that 15-point poll in New Hampshire and thought it was crazy. I still think it's too high. Saw the 11-point one, was it in Pennsylvania? I thought that was too high. But then you start seeing these national polls coming out when Fox News has it at 10 points. You know, Reuters has it at 15. Mm-hmm. One of the other ones had it at about 11 or 12. Another one has it at 8. I mean, you're starting to see numerous polls that have it. And then the state polls are sort of in some ways ratifying this, because you've seen a poll come out in Arizona showing Hillary up 3, and one in Georgia just today showing by Atlanta Journal-Constitution, yep, or they sponsored it, showing Hillary up 4. And so you're sitting here like,
up in Florida,
they all seem to make sense with each other. Maybe it is true. I don't know.
Well, I mean, look, there's two ways that this can go, right? Following a convention, we can revert back to the mean. And, you know, to a certain extent, this is the way I see this over the, you know, 4 or 5 years we've done this. I see this with our downloads. We'll have a day where it spikes, where it's like, oh my God, I can't
right.
believe this. We're pulling in more people than the 7 p.m. 8 MSNBC show. If this keeps up for more than, and then that was it. It was just that one day.
But something big happens, something goes viral. Yeah. It's kind of like when something goes viral and your Twitter account suddenly shoots up.
Right.
Like, oh my God, it's going to happen every day. I'm going to have as many followers as Katy Perry.
Or,
but it just doesn't really ever seem to happen that way.
Or, you know, you get the smaller bumps where you where it's actually a trend. And so this can go either way in that respect.
But I would say this, Sam, is that what I've always seen with this stuff is the reason why after these conventions, you have basically it's a week of propaganda. Right, you have 4 days in a row of nonstop coverage of one side saying whatever their message is in a at least somewhat not unfiltered, because you have the networks, but at least as unfiltered as possible, because people watch longer speeches by them as opposed to just little snippets. And what it does is it moves people who are undecided, who then can be moved back. But what I think, why I'm saying is, and I'm not saying it's going to stay this way, I don't think it will, it'll get closer, but why I think some of that bounce now may be locked in is because right as these people were moving towards Hillary because of speeches by, you know, Reverend Barber and by Mr. Khan and then some of the people that were elected officials, Elizabeth Warren and all these people, right as that was happening, he sort of proved exactly what they were saying and started coming out and insulting the Khan family and doing all these things, having people from his own side call him out, have numerous Republican officials, you know, Jeb Bush's top advisor, and maybe that's not a big deal nationally, but my guess is that got even more coverage in Florida, for example.
Right.
You know, these kinds of things announced that they're going to support Hillary Clinton, Meg Whitman and people like that. And so all this starts becoming a cycle, and people who sort of maybe were momentarily switching their mind and would have gone back get a little bit more locked in. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. it all happens and it sort of locks them in more. So I think it will revert to the mean somewhat. And there's no doubt that Hillary can find a way to screw it up and all sorts of crazy things can happen. But I think the mean is now a few more points in the Democratic direction than where it started, is what I'm saying.
And the what is the value of the polls here is beyond the actual, you know, where the polls end up landing, right? In other words, he becomes more and more toxic, and it puts pressure on people like Mike Pence, for instance, just as vice president, but also like Reince Priebus. I mean, I don't know. There's so many things to conflate here, because during this week where he attacked the Gold Star parents, he also refused to endorse the Speaker of the House, who's from his own party.
And the 2008 nominee of his party. He was in a very tight race. And again, one thing I can speak rather in an educated fashion about is John McCain and his background, because when I was writing the book I wrote on him in 2008, and I spent, you know, a couple weeks, I don't remember exactly how long I was out in Arizona researching it, you know, that was ground zero because of their proximity to the border of the Tea Party movement. It was already going on there before that election. A lot of people say, well, in 2009 with that summer and healthcare and everything, and that's true, but it had started these rumblings. They were already breaking away. They were threatening to censure McCain, which they eventually did because of campaign finance reform and supporting background checks on guns, but more than anything, the immigration issue. So I mean, you know, McCain already could lose a couple percent on the right of people that sit out because they hate him, and they have for a long time. You know, Trump, he's in more danger, I guess what I'm saying, than your normal senator of having somebody like Trump be able to derail him by attacking him and pulling a few percent from the right away from him. And I could see that happening. I think McCain's in a lot of trouble now.
Yeah.
Because of this.
Yeah, I think they just moved him into they just moved him into some type of you know, the Cook reports moved him into the section, into the
toss up,
I think. And but you know, like, he also crapped on Kelly Ayotte, which I think is very problematic. Yep. And we see Toomey in Pennsylvania, who, you know, by all accounts is a better candidate than McGuinty, but when you have that dynamic, the one thing that Hillary Clinton is doing is driving driving historic levels of support from women, and that's going to help someone like McGuinty in Pennsylvania. So
here I would say too, you know, because to me, you've got two races right now where you've got very vulnerable, just because of the states they're in, you know, Republican incumbents, and I would even say they're not, you know, phenomenal candidates. They're good, which would be both Toomey and Portman here in Ohio.
Right.
But the challengers against them, they are stronger than their challengers. Strickland and McGuinty are not top shelf challengers. But those are the two races, if I were going to say that Hillary's, as you said, turning out women, but also the extraordinary extent to which Trump has now offended minority voters. He's getting a combined in one poll 12% of the minority vote right now.
That's actually, you know, higher than I've seen. I've seen him getting 1% of the African American vote.
Well, African American, I'm combining with Latino and Asian. But the point being, you know, Republicans usually get somewhere in the, you know, more recently, even with Mitt Romney's low, they got, 30, 32, whatever, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, 27% of the Latino vote, and they would usually get around 30%, 35% of the Asian vote. So when you're falling to 10% or so, 12%, 15 at most among those two groups, you know, these are, you know, Asian Americans and Latinos. I mean, we're talking in places like Georgia, which is what you're seeing, in Arizona. I mean, these are hugely harmful. You know, I mean, the Clinton campaign right now is pulling their advertising from Virginia or Colorado because they're so far ahead.
Yeah.
And that's because of those kinds of numbers. You've got a large Muslim American population. I mean, not large, but, you know, disproportionately large versus the rest of the country in Virginia. You know, you've got Colorado disproportionately Latino population and college educated whites, who he's also repelling with this stuff. I mean, that's the thing, is that the polling doesn't matter so much as if they can get to a point where even if the polls start heading in the other direction, they're confident they can win somewhere, like Colorado, like Virginia, then they can start putting the money that they would be spending there. They can say, let's try to put away Arizona and Georgia too, and that, so that's where all this stuff becomes. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting on the presidential level with that. But then again, if Hillary really performs well above what you'd expect, and again, it's Hillary versus Trump. So it may not just be Hillary performing well. It's Trump performing terribly.
Yes, it is. Ohio
and Pennsylvania. To me, that's the two ways that the Democrats win in these two states.
And I will say this too, the sort of the X factor here, right, is how much does this dissension within the Republican Party, how much does it drive people to vote for, let's say, Gary Johnson in certain areas? Now, I don't even think he's on the ballot in Ohio, but particularly in these states.
11%, you're exactly right, because he was at 11% in that Georgia poll that had Hillary up 4%. And there's a classic example. In fact, I can speak anecdotally because I have a good friend who I grew up with, who's a Republican who lives in the Atlanta area. And, he said he was a never Trump guy and he's voting for Gary Johnson. And there's a classic example. He'd normally be voting for the Republican nominee.
Well, but
so,
here's
my guess is there's a lot of that.
But there's another element here, too. And I think Gary Johnson takes some from Clinton, but not nearly as much as, let's say, I should say. Jill Stein more reliably takes from Clinton it is less concerning for me in terms of Jill Stein taking those votes in states where she's well ahead, because what I'm thinking is how much there's a difference between Republican voters going out and voting for Gary Johnson or Republican voters just getting disgusted by the whole thing and saying, like, I'm not even going to go vote, because when they don't go vote, that's when you start to see the way that affects the down ballot, right? I mean, somebody comes in like, I'm not going to vote for Trump. I'm going to vote for Gary Johnson because they're sort of a Bill Weldian Republican. I mean, to the extent that those even exist anymore, I don't think they really do that much. But they're going to go and be sure to vote down ballot for Republican, right? But the one that says, like, I don't even know what is up and what is down anymore. I'm not even going to go vote because that's where you start to see that wave on those down ballot tickets. Now, let's just segue here for a moment into what's going on in Illinois, because Paul Ryan is up a couple of points in Wisconsin. Paul Ryan is up a couple of points in his in the polling, and I haven't seen. I'm sure their internal polling is probably more explicit. But he's running against this guy who is pretty anti-corporate, but also vehemently anti-Muslim. Here is,
like, to the point of, like, being such a racist, it's sickening.
Here he is. And this guy is also, obviously, maybe it goes without saying, he is a huge Donald Trump supporter. And in fact, Donald Trump has not openly endorsed this guy, Paul Nealon, but he has refused, as you know, to endorse Paul Ryan.
Did say that this guy was running a great campaign. Like, he did compliment the guy.
Yeah.
So
rewarding that. So here's Paul Nealon on, he was on, AM, what was it? AM six, I don't know. AM.
AM crazy?
Yeah, exactly. AM, the AM 560, The Answer. With, I don't know, with Amy Jacobson and Dan Proft. AM 560, The Answer. Here's Paul Nealon. And this is the exchange they had. I don't know where these hosts are on the ideological spectrum, because you could put Paul Nealon with just about anybody and they would sound at least rational in this context. Here is what he had to say. Are you there? Here's what he had to say about Muslims.
Let me finish. Mm-hmm. So if the break point is Sharia and Islam is the only major religion that encourages lying, the Taqiyya says, you have to lie to the infidel. You lie to them if you have to. So if you look at a Muslim and say, hey, are you lying? And they go, no. Okay, you're in. Absolutely. Okay, you're out. I mean, if they lie, how do you vet something like that?
Well, then how do you implement the test that you want to implement?
Well, then the question question is, why do we have Muslims in the country? That how can you possibly vet somebody who lies?
Well, so are you suggesting that we deport all of the Muslims in this country?
I'm suggesting we have a discussion about it, that's for sure. I am absolutely suggesting we figure out how do we here's what we should be doing. We should be monitoring every mosque. We should be monitoring all social media. We should be we've got 3 million Muslims in the United States. We've got 1,000 active FBI investigations going on right now. I mean, there is a problem. According to the February 20th...
Okay, look, I'm not even going to let the guy go on. The stunned
You know what's sickening about this also? I mean, not that it's all sickening, but even worse is it's an anniversary today, which is of the Oak Creek shooting of the Sikh temple, you know, and that's in Wisconsin. That's Milwaukee, by the way. And I think people wouldn't find me being necessarily jumping to a conclusion here to say that my guess is the shooter there might have thought he was shooting Muslim people because that mistake is made by these imbeciles. So you've got this guy basically almost encouraging hate crime on that anniversary. It's just, I mean, wow, does the scum just drip out of the woodwork, you know, during some of these Tea Party primary elections, doesn't it?
I mean, the look on these AM 560 hosts are just like, wait, what? I mean, the guy, putting aside sort of the right-wing fantastical thing, like all Muslims are basically lying about what they do to fool the infidel. I mean, you know, we hear this stuff about Mormons too. I mean, there's obviously stuff is written like this in some of you know, some documents in some religions. It obviously doesn't speak to any of that. But the idea that we would at least put deporting Muslims, all Muslims, on the table, and
let's just have the conversation, Sam. I mean, we're not going to necessarily do it. Let's just talk about it.
But
I love how they do that, right?
It's going to be fascinating.
I don't want to go so far as to say we should definitely do it, but we should be having that conversation.
This guy is growing in the polls. Now, I think, if I remember correctly, Paul Ryan's district is R+3. So he doesn't have a lot of margin here for error. And who knows? I mean, this would be, it would be crazy if this guy took out Paul Ryan. But here's the other...
Well, that's a winnable district, too, for Democrats.
Definitely.
I mean, it's only a slight lean Republican district. So if that guy takes out Paul Ryan, we probably win that seat, I'm okay with.
Here is one more sort of element to put into this little mix here. There was some talk that Democrats were the sort of the straw that broke the camel's back when David Bratt, I think his name was, beat Eric Cantor.
Yeah, the guy that beat Cantor.
In Wisconsin, Democrats, it is an open primary. Democrats could cross over and vote against Paul Ryan. It is the first thing I've read by Mickey Kaus in years, a piece I read talking about this.
The first informative piece you've read by Mickey
Kaus
in years?
And so
I usually find myself actually losing IQ points as I read Mickey Kaus.
Indeed. So but this is one time I think he really doesn't like Paul Ryan. I think because of Paul Ryan's reluctance to deport all Muslims. I don't know for sure about that, but who knows? But this could be, I mean, I haven't heard anybody say this stuff in Wisconsin. You don't hear that much about it. Obviously, I'm not in Wisconsin.
You should host your show there, Sam, and go and draw attention to the fact that Democrats can go and re-register as Republican. Or I guess
you don't have to register as Republican. The only thing would be that during that primary, you cannot vote on you choose. I get the Republican ballot or I get the Democratic ballot. So if you vote in the Republican primary for the House, you would have to vote in the Republican primary all the way down the ballot. So you wouldn't be able to vote for your choice for local races. But I'll tell you, to have Paul Ryan out of the House would throw them in such disarray that unless you had a relative running for office down ballot, it would be an easy decision for me to make.
because I mean,
yeah, me too. I mean, you know, I mean, again, you know, there's a risk because I remember some people who could switch over and vote and said, let's vote for Trump and make him the nominee. And that, on the presidential level, that's a much bigger risk. Your risk on the congressional level, I would say it's absolutely worth it to oust somebody like Paul Ryan and cause that kind of trouble in their ranks. I mean, my God, that sitting speaker and a guy that they barely were able to come to consensus on anyhow, you will knock the House into disarray completely, the Republican side. And entirely worth it, folks.
Oh.
So that's my advice.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in Wisconsin and you're wondering, I don't know, you know, I mean, I don't know what who the Democratic, if there's a primary even on the Democratic side in Paul Ryan's district. And it would be a drag not to vote in that if that was the case. But you got a much better chance, I think, of beating a Paul Nealon who talks like that in Wisconsin in a general election in an R+2 or 3 district.
I mean, that's a winnable district for us. And I think we'd have to look. But I think we've got a decent candidate up there again. The DCCC seems to never want to actually try to win that district. Which means you get someone like this lunatic, you know, let him just keep talking about deporting everybody.
Listen, we got 3 or 4 minutes here, and I just we're not gonna be able to do this justice, broadly speaking. But one thing that I want to just put into your head, we'll talk about it in the future, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves in terms of Clinton winning, but. Corey Robin had a piece, just a small little note on Facebook, which sort of echoes what we've been talking about a little bit, which is Hillary Clinton, if she wins, is not going to have the honeymoon from the left that Barack Obama had. And in fact,
that's right.
This week we saw three or four, well, if you include Debbie Wasserman Schultz over the past 2 weeks, four of the top people in the DNC, and a lot of administrative, yes, but four of the top people in the DNC were ejected, essentially, for their roles in the primary. And you also had this week, if you include the convention, you know, major delegate protests. I don't know that I would say that the Democratic Party is as divided as the Republican Party, but there is, because in some ways, I think there is a lot of people who support Hillary Clinton in the general, whose issue sets more closely align with Bernie Sanders in some way. Now, she's adopted a lot of those rhetorically, but want to see this stuff, and there's going to be demands made of her administration, I think, that will be more consistent with what we saw made of Obama's administration in his second term.
I think it's a good thing. I mean,
I do too.
You know, the biggest mistakes that President Obama made were when he first got elected and he expected that he was dealing with a normal opposition party and not a right-wing cult, you know, that was going to give him a chance and would sit there and actually, you know, make deals with him and debate and go back and forth and compromise in good faith, as democracy is supposed to be. So they'd look at his health care proposal and say, no, we're not willing to go that far. We're not going to accept the public option, but we will accept that. We're not doing, I mean, again, we're not dealing with that.
That is Obama's perspective.
But you need to stand up further to the left is the point that
right.
I'm making, because if you waste your time moving to the right to try to please these people, then all you do is piss your base off, and eventually you have a weak midterm election, which
right.
happened 2 times in a row, because you don't get the kind of change that people want.
Let me just finish it up with this. That's from the perspective of Obama and from the perspective of Clinton. But what I'm talking about is, you'll remember when Obama won, the left, to the extent that there is a left, and there was at that time and within the Democratic Party, was completely neutralized and had, you know, to borrow a phrase from Mitt Romney, had self-deported. You know, there was a lot of information, and nobody would challenge Obama until after 2010 from the left within the Democratic Party. You heard virtually none of it. I mean, I remember, you know, bankruptcy bill. There was just, if you mentioned it, you were an emo prog. If you mentioned it, you were a firebagger.
Yes.
And there, that is, it's going to be the opposite this time. And that's
which is good. We're in a different time.
Exactly.
The left has a lot more power. A lot of victories have been won on a variety of issues against the third wave types. And I think the any veil that existed for the right to hide behind and pretend they were going to be a partner in this is gone too. So every single thing from our perspective, I think you're going to hear a lot of people. And then you have one huge thing that you, well, two huge things, I would say, and maybe more if I think about it more. You have the presence of Bernie Sanders with a big loyal following. There was nobody to Obama's left who had that. And then you also have, you know, another wild card, Elizabeth Warren, who,
yep,
just because she's been very supportive of Hillary Clinton, she's got her own constituency and her own fundraising ability, too, and can challenge her from the left. Barack Obama did not have anything like that.
Not at all.
So I think you're just going to see a different situation.
Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next week.
Always, buddy. My pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cliff, he had to go a little bit early today, like 2 minutes. 2 minutes early. He couldn't.
I felt
couldn't
that.
Even stop. Well, he had told me, he's like, he had to get to a thing at 12:40, and then he couldn't even stop talking.
No.
We both have that same problem.
Yes.
Cliff and I both have.
Those of us who listen are aware.
Yeah. Cliff, that's, what are you going to do? All right, let's play one more piece of sound before we go to... we go to... Andy Kindler. Which one did you want?
No, she said the fun
half. Oh, the fun half. No, we're not going to the fun half. We're just going to get Andy Kindler. We're going to save Graham Beckel for Kindler. We're
going to save him for Kindler.
Let's play. You know, we hear a lot of talk about how Trump supporters are suffering from economic malaise. And, you know, there is an interesting fight that is taking place in different circles as to define what the Trump phenomena is about. And it is my belief that the fact that people are suffering economically could very well play into the Trump phenomena. But the determinant aspect of the Trump phenomena, I believe, and is more about PC and or anti-PC. And when you're anti-PC, what you're really saying is like, I'm holding on to the last vestiges of racism that I can, that I feel comfortable articulating in public. But, you know, The beauty about Trump is that he's expanding for his supporters. That bubble in which they feel comfortable expressing their, let's call them, anti-PC sentiments. And here are some Trump supporters in Portland, Maine. Now, I don't know why Donald Trump is campaigning in Portland, Maine. I think it's just because...
Great place.
Great place.
I was on an incredible speed trip.
Wanted to go get some duck boots at L.L. Bean. But here is some Trump supporters in Portland, Maine, telling a BuzzFeed reporter exactly what their problem with illegal immigration is.
About Trump at all?
No.
No? Why not?
I'm fine with Europeans coming here.
Okay, Europeans, but not who? Yeah.
Europeans are killing us.
A terrorist listed state.
Say, I'm pretty down with Western civilization. So.
Okay. Right.
There you go. They got no problem with the Europeans and Western civilization coming here. It's their immigration issues are centered around other issues.
Do they know that there are a lot of European Muslims? Are they confused?
I suspect, yeah. They're confused about a lot of things. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Andy Kindler.
Driving on night, you could be a shadow beneath the streetlight behind my home. Driving on night. Looking at the pine.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure. And I've got the soundtrack here. Okay, so on my computer. It is always a pleasure to welcome this young, strapping man onto our program, who was the inspiration for this little ditty.
With a Jew like Candy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, and he believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, AndyKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song, Andy Kindler.
Yes, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Andy Kindler from AndyKindler.com.
I'll tell you something. If you had told my ancestors, my European ancestors, who fled Berlin, let's make that story up. Flee Berlin. You know, my ancestors, they didn't need Hitler. In 1917, someone said, you know what, it's a little cold this year. And they said, cold in Germany, let's get out. This will not blow over. But if you had told me that I would laugh at an intro with a Jew like Andy Kindler, back then I would have said, no, you're crazy.
But now it's all up for grabs.
It makes me laugh so hard. With a Jew like... If I sing it, does that mean I have to pay royalties?
I don't, probably. He'll probably send you a bill. I don't know if Jimmy Reefercake will... I mean, who knows? Jimmy, if you put a link to allthehypocrisy.com, he might let you get away with it.
Well, I thought he doesn't believe in... I thought he told me once that ASCAP and BMI were the man. That's what I heard.
There you go. Now, Andy... Let's talk.
I like when you say phenomena. Can you say phenomena two more times?
Phenomene?
No, you said the Trump phenomena.
The Trump phenomena.
I love it.
It's all the phenomenons that are around Trump is what I'm talking about. All right, look, Andy, my understanding is you're from Hollywood, right? You live in Hollywood.
Oh, well, first of all, I'm a Jew. I run the media. And in my spare time, I am the assistant of the president of show business.
All right. Well, let's be honest. You are the person that has been basically tasked with giving the state of the industry address every year.
Yes.
Right. Now, of course, comedy isn't the entire Hollywood industry, so I'm not going to ask you to speak for all of Hollywood I would for all of comedy. However, actor Graham Bekel was on the Don Lemon program on CNN with...
Who is it?
Graham Bekel.
You
don't know Graham Bekel?
I heard you mentioning this, but I don't think I know Graham Bekel.
Bekel?
He played
Great
Jack
guy.
Fisk on Battlestar Galactica, the original one, I think, and was Hal Sanders on Heroes.
Graham Bekel's a great man.
No, wait. So
it's not Glenn Beck's alter ego?
No. He is defending Clint Eastwood, who you know, Andy, because of your position in Hollywood. The other day came out and basically complained that people were complaining about Donald Trump because back in his day, they didn't call that kind of stuff racist. Let me give you a couple of quotes from Eastwood. Now, Eastwood did concede that Trump has said a lot of dumb things, but so have all of them, both sides. But everybody, right. The press, and everybody's going, oh, well, that's racist. They're making a big hoodoo out of it. Just
right.
effing get
the,
over
the,
it.
The PC culture, you mean?
Yeah.
The PC?
Just effing get over it, he said. It's a sad time in history. Now, I don't want to get into an argument with Clint Eastwood about history, but I suspect, like, World War II was also a sad time in history, or the killing fields in Vietnam, sad time
it.
In history,
Stop
or
complaining.
World War I, probably a pretty sad time in history. I mean, I could go on and on, genocide in this country, but all the PC stuff now, that's making it very sad. He referred to it, well, I'll read just one more quote, and then we're going to listen to Graham Beckel, and then I want to get your response, Andy.
My take?
Yeah.
Coming out, are you saying coming out of the clip?
Coming out of the clip. I want to get your take.
Before the clip. Coming out of the clip. Okay. which camera is mine? Which camera is mine?
Eastwood fumed. Quote, Trump is, quote, onto something, because secretly everybody's getting tired of political correctness kissing up. That's the kiss-ass generation we're in right now. We're really in a pussy generation. Everybody's walking on eggshells. So,
pussy?
Yeah.
Is it pussy?
Yeah.
Like, don't pussyfoot around?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, sorry.
And he also said Clinton's is a tough voice to listen to for 4 years.
I can't stand women with their, I mean, when they're in the kitchen making the food, I don't mind the whining.
Let's listen to Graham Beckel on the Don Lemon program to see what he has to say about this. And then when we come out of this clip, I want to get your hot take on this.
You want my take on it, right?
Yeah, your take.
Clint's 86 years old, lives in Hollywood, and kissing ass is, you know, it's the currency of the realm. Everybody in Hollywood kisses ass except people with a tremendous amount of integrity. He being one, Warren Beatty, Tommy Lee Jones, Morgan Freeman, people from the left and the right. Some people have integrity. Clint Eastwood is one of them. And I love the popping you guys are doing with this corn overreading and some kind of racist thing about it. I think that's it's dim-witted and slanderous.
How is it being overrated and racist? Explain that.
What didn't somebody just say what Clint was saying was racist? Did I not hear that?
But I want you to explain how it's being racist by pointing that out.
Okay, well, to the extent that all that is political correctness, Clint Eastwood kind of transcends political correctness as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I was working with him in San Quentin Prison. We were doing a movie. And we had heavy guards around us, a lot of guards. And right before lunch, they all took off, and Clint led the crew and the cast through the yard. There were 800 prisoners in that yard, and they were black, they were white, they were Hispanic, Asian. Whatever God has ever made, the visage of man was in that yard. It was utterly silent. That man walked into the middle of that crowd, and everybody suddenly burst into applause, and they were cheering him. Why? Because he's the masculine ideal. He's the guy who tells it like it is.
Okay, so Graham, but what does that have to do with
the
question?
Thing is.
Okay, but maybe
the post-colonial victim shit. I don't get it. Sorry,
Charles.
Oh,
no, you don't ask me to answer that. I don't even know what this man is talking about. I mean,
there you go.
Hey, well, first of all, that's the first time Don Lemon's ever looked good. The first exchange in his life where he didn't hate Don Lemon.
I gotta say, Don Lemon totally owned that segment.
He stepped up to the plate. It's the last thing he said was he didn't know what the guy was talking about.
That was Charles Blow. Said, like, I'm not gonna answer because I don't know what that guy's talking about.
Oh, Charles Blow. I love Charles Blow.
Don Lemon.
I don't know why
goes.
I have to say I love it. Hey, don't get me wrong. I love Charles Blow. It's Lemon I can't.
No, but I ask you, the reason why I want to get your take on this, Andy, I don't want to just leave it hanging out there. A lot of people have said that you are the ultimate in masculine visage.
Yes.
And I know there hasn't been times where you've walked through a prison yard with 800 prisoners, but you've had your time when you've done similar things. Like, I'm quite convinced, like, I've seen you stroll through, like, the courtyard at the newsroom.
Well, let me tell you something. I was doing a movie years ago with Billy Jack. Is that, I don't know if that's his name.
That's not the actor's name, but I understand what you're saying.
Oh, right.
Tom Coughlin. Tom Coughlin, yeah.
And we walked into a cafeteria, and there were people there of every creed. I don't care, be there. I don't care. They were brown, green, they were, of every. And I said, I'm going to take my foot, and I'm going to put it on this side of your head. Oh, I'm sorry, that's a line from Billy Jack. No, look, that dog's not going to hunt, Sam, you attacking. That, you know, you're going to pop corn? Is this what you're really going to do? You're going to play that clip and try and pop that corn? You're going to pop that corn, right?
I'm popping the corn.
Oh, my God. I mean, no, I know where the guy's coming from. He really, I don't know, he really didn't, why did he go on that show? Why would a man like Graham Beckel put himself in jeopardy by going on that show?
I don't know. Well, I mean, I think he really believes that this is a bunch of post-colonial victimization crap, and he wants to get over
it. You
know,
any celebrity who goes into a prison will get a round of applause. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
People like even I might get a round of applause. And there is no more feminine symbol of a man than me. There's no more androgynous symbol of a man than me.
I could definitely.
Hi, everybody. What are you in here for?
Hi.
What's your bid, manslaughter? Ooh. Why didn't you bump it up to something a little more edgy?
But you do shows in white collar facilities, right?
Absolutely. Let me tell you
something. Is this the Arthur Enron crowd? Hello. Yeah.
I went to a gig last week, and the guy said, how do you want to be paid? I said, I'm going to be paid in the coin of the realm. That's what I said. I said, what realm are we in exactly? And what is the going coin? Give me some of that.
Did you take that guy, six ass kisses?
That guy was in a movie. That was a movie scene he was playing.
It was, really, actually. I'm quite convinced we could probably find, somebody Googled half of what he said. You could see that it lined up with one of his scripts at one point.
You know, when I was a kid, people, I didn't care if they called me Heeb, Kikey, Kike, 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 Jewy, Jewy, Jew boy. We were men.
Jewy, Jewy, Jew boy? That's my favorite.
I used to call my Chinese friend, hey, Charlie Chan Chan. And we laughed. We laughed because it wasn't a bad. Yes, we were. Yes, all my friends were racist. But back then, there wasn't someone breathing down your. You didn't have the ACLU breathing down your neck. Are you telling me we live in a country where we can't say terribly horrible things anymore about each other? Everything's a big deal. Oh, everything's a big deal now.
Well, it's not so much that you can't say horrible things anymore. It's the fact that there's the audacity of people who have access to social media who will hold you account for saying horrible things that people don't like.
Oh, I'm the bad guy? I'm the bad guy because I said, oh, I say black people, maybe slavery was better. I say a simple, I make a statement.
Or maybe they were well fed.
Slavery seemed to be happy, and now I'm the bad guy.
Well fed.
Now,
right?
Andy, I mean, let's talk about this because you've been taking some heat, or at least you thought you were taking heat. I saw some exchange between you and Marin where you assumed Marin was telling you to stop talking on Twitter. And I don't think he was. I think he was just trying to be funny.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. He wasn't. He actually just confirmed. Here's the thing. I'm a very, very brave man, Sam. And if a robot knocked on my door and said, I don't like your political tweets, I would say, you know what? This robot has a point. I can fold my tent so fast. So I feel like I was being strident. Because I'm tweeting about John Berman for CNN.
I saw that. So, I was like, who's John Berman? You have a really strong opinion about some guy I've never heard of on CNN.
Well, he's he looks like a failed game show host is what he looks like. He looks like a guy who is mad because Chuck Woolery got Love Connection years ago. And he just all day long keeps saying the same thing about Hillary's emails. And he's just driving me crazy. But I do think that I come across as strident. But then I don't think Mark was saying that, but it just confirmed my own. But you know what it was? I really felt like I was eating myself up inside, is what I was. For real. I mean, like, this election is just getting me.
Everybody's going
so
crazy.
So bad.
I mean, I think it's dry. We were just saying this with Cliff. Like, this is all. incredibly exhausting. I mean, when I go in to MSNBC, everybody looks like just shell-shocked because the pace of everything has been so fast and so insane. That
are you sure it isn't because they saw Heilman and Halperin in the hallways? And is that why they?
I don't even know if they're...
Because that can make anybody look shell-shocked. Oh, my God. My Heilman and Halperin material isn't going over.
You got to stick
with all due respect.
Your Berman material. Your Berman material is much better than your Halperin material.
Heilman the other day said that Tim Kaine was bland. Heilman.
Let that stand alone.
Oh, that's not his name. Is his name Heilman?
Heilman.
Heilman.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so.
So well, they look like. So they look like. Yeah, and then that network. What happens? Do they hand the right wing baton to the left wing in like 3 p.m. or something? I don't understand that network. I mean, I know Comcast is doing a fantastic job in general running television.
They're doing great. To be honest with you, I have no idea. Like, I'm convinced they don't even really know that I go on their network at all. I'm quite convinced that there's
Chris Hayes, when Chris Hayes comes on, it's like all of a sudden it's beautiful. It's a beautiful morning. I can hear the birds tweeting. You're on there. It's wonderful.
Well,
and then all of a sudden Maddow is complaining about the opening of Bill Clinton's speech. I'm done with Maddow. I don't want to get you in trouble with MSNBC, but done with Maddow.
Like I said,
I know you love him. What's that?
If Andy has permission, I would like to hear, because I did think Rachel Maddow's response to the Clinton speech was a little odd.
Did not hear that, but I think I did see your tweets about it. But tell us about your perspective on it. I mean, I didn't see it. I'm not sure that they know that I even work there, so...
I think they said it was, okay, Bill Clinton.
Oh, the girl thing.
Yeah, he talked about meeting his wife, and she thought that was shocking. What'd she call it? Shocking and weird.
Well, wasn't it, though, because he referred to, like, I saw a girl over there? I mean, I took that part of the speech to be, like, Bill Clinton wanted to project that he's known Hillary Clinton for, well, because he has, but for, you know, 50 years. And that they knew each other from when they were boys and girls. That's the way I took that line. I mean, I could see how others might, but not. But that's the
no,
way
but
I
you know it. What? But her objection was more than that. Her objection was that how does he have the nerve to portray him and Hillary as a loving couple on any level after all the stuff we know about them. Mm. And that to me is pretty disgusting because, look, Sam, I'm not approving of affairs. Like, I'm not saying you should. I don't know who I am now. No. Hey, look, Sam, I'll be whether you have it or not. I'm not saying it's right to have affairs.
I wish
it was
you
never
had one
anybody's
of those afternoon
business.
Shows.
It was never anybody's business, and she's criticizing. How does she know what their relationship was like? She all of a sudden turned. She turned an ugly corner.
I mean, I agree with you insofar as like you don't judge other people's marriage in that situation. I mean, they've stayed together, whatever, they made it work. It is a weird place, I think, for liberals to get moralistic about people's marriage. There may be other things, and like I think maybe he could have probably gotten away with saying like she's been a better wife to me at times than I've been a husband to her, but you know, we don't
know
that.
That's a goddamn lie.
Well, that's the thing. You don't really know. I mean, I'm just saying from a marketing standpoint that might have been helpful.
That is not true.
Yeah, that is a weird thing, I think, to sort of judge their marriage and presume that other people perceive it that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to pop corn. I'm sorry, I tried to get a call back there. No, but the thing about it is that I just also think it's like the media, and not just MSNBC, it's all terrible, but the idea that, is this our view of the 90s? Is this, in other words, like, are we really going to say there was no out-and-out dirty trickster? We're going to find anything we can to tear Bill Clinton and then Obama down, and then it's like if you don't want to like Hillary Clinton, don't like her.
But don't every network is now saying like she knowingly, I do not believe she knowingly opened up an email that said, hey, this is classified, you know, hot stuff, and then started forwarding it around. And that's what every single media outlet is saying. I started to complain about it online. I couldn't even get people like on my side to back me up to think that that was odd, that that seems to be the narrative now.
And frankly, the things, I mean, look, there's two different issues here. One is that, or there's three. One is that we have overclassification. The emails that she forwarded that were supposedly classified were literally stuff that in no way endangered national security or anything like this. Stuff gets classified all the time. Like, I'm going to write the ambassador of Moldavia and don't tell... what was that?
Moldova.
And I don't think it was actually Moldova that she was writing to.
No, it was Moldavia.
Was it? No, it wasn't either.
No, I'm just kidding.
But the point being that there's an overclassification. There was arguments as to the classification. I suppose, you know, if anything she's guilty of is being paranoid that people would want to dig through her emails, which I don't know the paranoid is really the right adjective at that point. I think, maybe having a sufficient forethought. There's a... I mean, I don't like her policies, and I didn't like Bill Clinton's. I certainly didn't. I wasn't terribly enamored with Bill Clinton, frankly, and that's been longstanding. But without a doubt, there is a different set of rules in which the press reports on Clinton.
Yeah, and here's the thing. If you look, I got this thing from PolitiFact, and the thing from PolitiFact, it goes through this whole thing about how not only did the email not marked classified, they're talking about there were portion markings somewhere down the email. And then, so now the media is playing the GOP hearings. It's like I say, regardless of what you think, I don't know if you know about this, but I voted for Obama. But regardless of the policies, this has been. Did nothing, and I have this. Nothing happened in Benghazi. She did not send all these things. There's 45 investigations, and now they're taking clips from the GOP. They're cherry picking clips from this GOP railroad thing that they had where they brought Comey in. And by the way, Comey didn't indict her, and all of a sudden now people are like, well, you got to trust Comey. You know, Comey, like last December, said that police can't do their job because of they're worried about being videotaped. This is Comey. Comey's the head of the FBI. I know it's your favorite organization, Sam, but I had some issues about it over the years. I mean, it's just incredible. So I feel like I'm living in a crazy world, and I know that it's not. This bit isn't as funny as it will be when I add my hand gestures and I do my impressions, somehow I end up down my pants. But it's driving me crazy.
It is. This is like an incredibly insane, insane time right now. I think. I really do think this is. It's been nuts. And I what are how are people out? I mean, when you go out on the road, do you do political material or no?
I do. I mean, I do. Like, it's weird. Up in Montreal was the first time.
Tell us about this. Now you did the state of the industry address. People can find it online, right?
Yeah, it's on SoundCloud. It's on Pace Magazine, and I spent time because I've been fascinated with. Ricky Gervais, he does these things now. It's just if you ever want to cheer yourself up by going to someone's Twitter account who's a comedian and yet completely not self-aware, he does these things like he goes, my jokes, you don't know what the joke is going to be until the surprise part. That's what he says on a tweet. With my comedy. You know how, Sam, you start out with the punchline of your joke?
Of course.
And then if people don't laugh, you go, oh, maybe I should have set it up.
Yeah, I'll do the punchline, and then I'll go back and say, think about this. here's the premise. And then,
yeah, I'll say King Kong. I thought you said a ping pong's ball. I think you said King Kong's balls.
Is he maybe
they don't
not
laugh, so I go, oh, let me backtrack. But what he does, check it out, Sam. What he does is, you don't think it's going to be, you know, you're just hearing words.
Right.
You don't think there's going to be a laugh. And then on the punchline part of the joke, that's where he brings the humor in.
Wow.
So this is what he tweets about. And then he goes, I'm doing another new comedy night. He has new comedy nights. I thought you just go out and do a set and you're supposed to be doing new comedy. So anyway, I was fascinated with, I just love that guy in terms of
you've really disliked him for a long time. You've disliked him for a long time.
So,
Andy, can I ask a question?
Yeah, I mean, from way back.
So what is it about Ricky Gervais that you think is so courageous and groundbreaking in terms of what he's doing?
Oh, what he's groundbreaking. Here's what's groundbreaking about him. Is that he's saying to you people, I'm sorry. There is no old man in the clouds, you stupid God people. I'm sorry. Which God are we? Here's one of his things. Which God are you referring to? There's so many. Oh, I'm sorry that your magic lantern wizard spaceship person creature is going to save you. Hey, let me give you the news, someone who didn't realize this when they were 8 years old.
Andy, you're stuck in comedy
purgatory.
There's
no human. What's that?
You're stuck in a sort of comedy hell. And if you had to choose Bill Maher or Ricky Gervais, who provokes you more?
Well, I think Ricky Gervais was funny at one time. And Bill Maher has never... Well, no, that's not true, though. I used to actually like Bill Maher at one point. He's always been terrible at delivering jokes. But I kid the terrible comedian. This guy's night in the show would work with the Lawrence Livermore Nuclear Laboratory. My old job. And I love what he does. I love what Bill Maher says.
Good Bill Maher
jokes
impression.
Like this. And then, of course, Bill Maher. And then Obama's in the White House, and he's going, look, hello there, Dumbo. He does black people from the 40s.
Or the 70s.
How come Obama can't be the mean black guy? How come he has to be the nice black guy? That's an actual Bill Maher joke. Why are you getting me going?
who else did you address in your industry address? Let me ask you this. Was there anybody who was in it this year that wasn't in it last year? Like, do you have a new source of angst or of annoyance?
Yeah, I kind of did a thing. It's interesting. It's not interesting. Why do I preface something with it's interesting? It's not a new. I found a new way to go after Louis C.K. It was a brand new way because what happened was that Louis C.K. I don't know if I talked about this on the show, but Louis C.K. a few months ago, he emails his fans and he compares Trump to Hitler, right? And all of a sudden, everybody, Lawrence O'Donnell, genius. Because Lawrence O'Donnell loves anyone who's successful. This guy's rich. So it's like, genius. So I was like, oh, I've been comparing people to Hitler since I'm 5 years old, but because I'm not... I'm not the darling. I'm not the Louis darling. I know this sounds envious because it is, but I'm not the Louis darling. It's like I was the one who said that Dan Cook was like Hitler.
You did.
Except he's worse because at least Hitler had a point of view. I said Bill Maher was like Hitler, except at least Hitler was likable. I'm the one who said Trump is like Hitler, but at least Hitler was a veteran. So I said these things. I get nothing. And then Louis C.K., he tells his fans not to vote for Donald Trump. And so I said, I certainly hope the people who are downloading Horace and Pete don't make the faithful decision to vote for Donald Trump. Because that's exactly the target audience are people. If you have to download something or put a code in,
or put numbers onto a keyboard or swipe something or perform a computer operation. You're not, unless it means punch your computer now to download.
That was so weird. That those was almost like you almost did like a version of the like those old redneck jokes there, Andy.
If you know, I also did Jeff Foxworthy on the Golden Corral commercials. If you like food that's been sitting in the chafing dish for 7 hours, you just might like the Golden Corral.
So, all right. So you took on Louis in a new way. In a new way.
I also did,
but no
Dennis
new,
Miller.
Dennis Miller.
10 years from now.
Oh,
I did him 10 years
what's
from
that?
Now. Look, Cha Cha. Maybe Schickelgruber had a couple of problems, but if you've ever been on the Amtrak Acela going from Baltimore to Washington D.C., sometimes you say, so maybe I would like a Holocaust if I could get there on time. Choo choo cha cha ching ching cha cha choo choo.
So that's brilliant and hilarious. What's the difference between 10 years and now?
What could it say? Where's the 10 years part come in? I feel like that could have been like, here's Dennis Miller 10 years in the future, or Dennis Miller 10 years in the past, or Dennis Miller 10 minutes from now, or 10 minutes ago.
Hey, look, Jules Verne, maybe you don't like waterboarding, but let me tell you something. I'd rather get the information out of a terrorist hunter than to be after the crimes and punishment there with the Koreshnikov.
It's like...
Billy O'Reilly.
Trying to Anybody find the calls? Joke in that is like
Bill
crop
O'Reilly,
circles
Billy O'Reilly.
In the fa-fa-fa-fa.
Hey there.
Crop circles.
Hey.
Crop
hey, it's
circles
the Sam Cedarmeister.
Weapons of mass destruction. Crop circles. Ba, ba, ba.
It's like Pliny. I always wanted someone in an interview to actually ask him, how is it like, insert Roman reference? Like, how so?
Oh,
what was
this
the,
is
what was the,
I think
what was
I did
the Dennis
come up
Miller
with a good,
bit that we had.
I had a good closing. What's that?
We had
the Goodfellas one.
We had the Dennis Miller joke. Oh, was that the Goodfellas? Like that guy looks like the third extra on the scene from when the guy's walking out of the truck, but the guy turning around the corner next to that lady buying the paper. Pa pa pa.
It was part of the deleted scenes in Mighty Ducks 3. It was initially shot in Vancouver, even though it was based in Orange County. That's what millennials don't understand about Hillary Clinton. Pa pa pa.
She reminds me of Jane Greer in Out of the Past, but Jane Greer's woman who cleaned her apartment in that movie. Ba, ba, ba.
Hey, look, maybe we need a Joey Goebbels. You know, get the word out.
All right, wait. So wait a second, Andy.
About the Jews.
Andy.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a second. What? So was there, did you not have a new target of your ire? Was there no one who broke into the speech this year?
No, wait. I did have this. Well, I'm going to tell you about one line I was very proud of. I said a lot of critics compare me to Joan Rivers. Not my comedy. They just predict I will die during a routine procedure.
That's a good joke.
Now, that was new.
Well, I'm not saying if you had new jokes. I'm saying, like... Is there not anybody new on the scene that you have a problem with relative to last year? Is there, like, who is the new person who's annoying you? Is it, I mean, is it really just John Berman?
Well, no. I did go, I'll tell you one guy I went after, but it kind of bombed.
Okay.
But I thought it was going to kill.
Who?
Was I went after G.E. Smith.
Oh, good.
Because in 2012, and I'm not someone who plugs their own credits, but perhaps you remember a little show I did, little David Letterman's show. I remember when I went to the Republican National Convention.
Mm,
so when I went to the
well, who was that guy? When I went to Republican National Convention in 2012,
yeah.
I saw G.E. Smith there.
Yeah.
And then he was there again this year.
Playing on
so
stage.
So he claims that, and you know what his excuse was for playing the Republican National Convention? Did you know what it is?
He's divorced and he's got to pay alimony?
This is what he said in some interview. Well, what? First they offered me good money. I said, I'm sorry, no. Then they offered me really, really good money. I said, you know what? I'm going to take a pass. Then they offered me an amazing amount of money, and I said, sure, I'll do it. That's exactly what his explanation was.
Right.
And I thought the third one was going to be a kicker, too.
I don't know. I like that. I mean, that would... I'm not sure that I don't know that I would actually play on stage for the Republican convention. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure I could see you as the lead singer in the Republican National Convention.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, my musical talents are such that it would be a big mistake on their part. But I'm trying to imagine like a context where if there was enough money, I would do something at the Republican convention other than try and mock people. And...
Oh, I did Cheney's birthday. I did Cheney's birthday party once for. That was that. I'm not going to turn that down. But let me tell you something. Here's the jokes that did not go over about that.
Okay.
I said that G.E. Smith and the Sellouts are going in the studio to record Sessions with Jeff Sessions.
Okay. I mean, I think it may have been.
I said you could.
Yeah,
I said you could see him this summer at Confederate Bonnaroo.
That's good.
That's good. Jeff Sessions, Bonnaroo.
And this joke
did get
a laugh. I said he agreed to change his name. G. Smith agreed to change his name to Comcast Smith for $40.
Okay. I think, you know, it's just G. Smith.
If you ever
not
react,
the most
if
obvious.
You ever react to one of my jokes again by saying, okay, I'm going to jump out of this window. Okay, Andy, where are you playing now? Okay. All right then. Not bad.
I just don't know if the G. Smith can carry three jokes in a row. That's the problem.
It didn't.
Is there anybody else, any comedians that you took on that you had never taken on before? No.
I did. I think I did James Corden.
Now, who's that guy?
Because of the...
does he do the late night show?
Who?
Is he that...
He does the...
British?
He does the...
Who's that?
Karaoke carpool. James Corden is... He's not Carson Daly.
Okay.
I know that. He does carpool karaoke late at night.
What the hell is that?
What?
Oh, okay, yeah, that guy.
No,
James Corden. He does the late show or something, right?
He's a star because he came up with this idea, strap yourselves in, put people in a car, and have them do karaoke.
Mm.
Boom. Viral.
I saw him in Into the Woods, I think. It was a kid's movie or about something like that. Yeah, that guy really, I find him a little bit annoying.
Craig Ferguson I went after.
Nice. I mean.
I said he has a new show on the History Channel. Maybe it should be on the He's History Channel. And then he blocked me right after I tweeted that, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know what?
Maybe
you know
it wasn't a strong speech.
You know who I found out? You know who I found out has blocked me, which has been pretty upsetting, and I didn't realize this. I hadn't realized it for, I thought, to be honest with you, I thought he passed away, was James Woods apparently blocked me. I don't know when.
Oh, my God.
It could have been years ago. I have no
Twitter
idea.
Account.
It's too bad. I feel like I'm missing out a little bit.
Oh, he might be. There's another guy named Nick Searcy. I don't even want to say his name because he's so mean. Nick Searcy. I don't even know who he is. He's on a show called Justified.
He's like
James Woods with an attitude.
Nick Searcy. I got to look that
up. Oh, I went after Lorne Michaels, Sam. I went after Lorne Michaels.
All right, let's hear
it. Maybe I've gone after him before, but I went after him.
All right, well, let's hear it. What did you say?
I said,
I wish Louis C.K. had sent an email months ago to Lorne Michaels to request that he not book Trump. And then I said, I went through a series of who wouldn't Lorne Michaels allow to host SNL. And also I said that, I said trivia. How many Nazis has Lorne booked to host SNL? Kurt Waldheim hosted 3 times. Himmler hosted twice. Lorne Michaels had to cancel Hitler's third appearance because of bunker issues.
It's all right. We have a great show for you tonight. Ariana Grande is here.
I think any Kurt Waldheim joke. I think any Kurt Waldheim joke. I'm sorry. If you work Kurt Waldheim into a joke, ladies and gentlemen, you are...
They would do bits where he would like play a Jew, but really awkwardly. Like, what about if he's a Jew? Like, hi, I am the new Jew in the neighborhood.
My name is Isaac Eisenberg.
My name is Maxwell Goldbromowitz. Not many of my family is left. Ha ha, netta.
People make fun of me because... my first name is Adolf. I have them killed. People ask me, do you have a solution for the Jews? Solution? I've got a final solution. Come on, Michael, give me some more.
Give me a problem.
I can't do impressions.
Many problems, many solutions, all culminating in one. But look, seriously, it's about everybody having fun. We don't need to do the political stuff. I mean, humor is something we all experience, and you will too until your family's in the oven.
Oh, boy. Well, Andy.
And, you know, a lot of people have ADHD, so I can't even put them in the concentration camp. Look, I'm sorry about that joke.
I'm like, where are they going? I don't understand. They can't focus.
That's Andy. Come on. I think you can do better than that.
Come on, Andy.
Come on.
You know, I did say that Mike Huckabee... Why has Mike Huckabee visited Auschwitz 6 times? Doesn't that make anyone a little suspicious? I mean, sure, twice. You go twice, you didn't get to go on the rides and everything. But 6 times? What is he, making notes? What is he, drawing up a schematic? 6 times, Mike Huckabee?
I don't think he's that ambitious.
Yeah, that's cutting-edge humor.
He's just, he's spitballing. Andy Kindler. Always a pleasure to have you on. People can follow you at Andy Kindler, at Andy Kindler, right?
Hey, Andy. I really enjoyed the State of Comedy address. It's very good. Dennis Miller is a hack, am I right?
It's very good.
Ricky Gervais is so pleased with himself. I just want to put him on the train.
Really light on the Jewish comedians. I thought you were just kid gloves on
I thought you, but you know, to be fair, you went after Ma. I mean, the guy is such an ego on this one. They're all like him.
And they call me.
Yeah, they call me nasty. He says,
oh, by
Barack
the way,
Obama
Penn
should be like...
host Celebrity Fuhrer.
He says Barack Obama should be like Superfly, and this is cutting edge. I mean, come on.
And
hey.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to let you know.
Yeah.
That when, if you get off, if anybody wants to go online today, and see how I'm getting. I'm not going to say what the topic is, but I'm getting currently pummeled online.
Are you really?
Yeah, because I defended. I'm not going to even say what the deal is because I don't want to get it. I just defended a friend of mine.
Is this about Jen?
And what I said was, I said she's a wonderful person. I said, I don't know what happened, but she's a wonderful person. She's a hilarious person. And I just want to say she's, you know, I don't exactly know what happened, but I know that she's a good person.
That was
and
so
boy,
stupid.
Did I catch it.
Yeah.
That was so stupid of you, Andy.
I know. What is the matter with
she me? She made this obvious joke about Clinton conspiracy theories, and people took it to be like, oh, you're glad that, you know, she supported a coup in Honduras or something. It was ridiculous.
And then, you know, the only thing is, this happens all the time, and this is not, I mean, we can't talk about it now because it's too long, but like what happened with like, you know, I felt so terrible for Leslie Jones because like Leslie Jones, they would just, and when they did this with me today, they would take like, they take little things from what I said and then they take it out of context.
But what I said was that they took out of context whether she made a mistake or not. Oh, that's going to come back to burn me in the ass, guys.
Boom. Kindler,
boom.
You're next, my man. All right.
I love you guys.
Thank
I'll tell you.
Andy.
Oh, was that Michael? I'm not going to stop you.
What?
I don't know. What happened was I thought that Sam was saying my segment is over.
Yeah, that's
so
what
now
I'm
all I'm thinking of is that I've outlasted my welcome, but I didn't want to cut you off when you're doing comedy.
Me? No, you're not cutting that. This is Sam. I wasn't doing anything of the sort.
Okay.
I thought Michael was going into
something. Oh, no, let's cut off Michael.
I thought Michael was...
We can cut off Michael. That's fine.
Okay. Well, you know, I just want to say before I go that I have the worst ability to get off of a show. I have the worst close of a show in a comedy club. Nobody leaves a conversation worse than me.
Why cut off the
Nobody
funny one?
Nobody exits a deli.
I don't think Andy can hear this music. You got to turn up the red dial.
I can.
I can't hear? Okay, good.
Wrong, Sam.
Is that Love Story?
Yeah.
I love you guys.
I love you too.
I'm sorry for everything. I'm sorry for everything.
Goodbye, Andy.
I love you, man. Have a great weekend.
I'll see you later.
Great humor.
Andy Kindler, ladies and gentlemen. All right, now, we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song, I think.
I did not have that.
You did
nope.
not pull it. All right.
Nope.
All right.
I'll play it on Monday.
Okay. Somebody on Twitter asked me, what was the song we played at the break? Do you remember that song? I don't know if you knew what...
Driving on 9 was one I played.
Oh, but the one you played the
first song?
The waltz.
Oh.
You didn't do this on purpose, but do you know what that song was?
I have no idea.
Press that song again. Play it.
There's no song called The Waltz.
It's not The Waltz. It was called, what's it called? What was the one that you played? Played. It was like, no, not that one. That's Buffalo Tom. This one.
This one.
This song played. I don't know if this is what they were asking about, but do you know what this song is?
I have no idea.
Coincidentally?
Yeah, tell me.
Do you know who wrote this song?
Andy Kindler.
Clint Eastwood.
That is so bizarre.
It is so bizarre. Clint Eastwood wrote this song for, I can't remember what the movie was. It was with Kevin Costner. It's a pretty good movie. He directed it. Eastwood, and he was acting in it. Costner was like some type of criminal on the run. And this is like a Cajun style song. Clint Eastwood, great musician.
He's a very talented man.
Not so great. I mean, super masculine, without a doubt.
He's the personification of manhood. This is why we did Invictus, you pussy. Oh, go to the fun half and stop being a cuck.
All right, we're going to go to the fun half. I just want to remind you, Ring of Fire Radio this week. Michael joined me on Ring of Fire. Cliff Schechter. Nomi Kunst. She is the host of The Filter on Sirius XM. And she, Bernie Sanders delegate. Interesting perspective on that. Check that out. Ring of Fire radio.com. You can head over to the rofpodcast.com to sign up for that podcast. All right, let's take a break. We'll go into the fun half. Folks, remember, it's your membership that makes this possible. I want to thank, there was a couple people who wrote in and said, you know, I joined because, you know, I don't necessarily agree with you all the time, but don't like the idea that some people quit the show because they didn't appreciate your perspective on Bernie or bust. And so I just want to say to them, I appreciate that because we did, you know, lose some people and that happens, you know, and maybe they'll come back, maybe they won't. Some people get really annoying about it, though. I mean, look, I get it. You disagree. You don't want to listen to the show, but I don't necessarily have to have your opinion. In fact, I necessarily don't have to have your opinion. And almost that's my job requirement on some level. Is to not necessarily have your opinion.
Least cuck thing you've ever said.
It's the least cuck thing, but we're going to go full cuckitude in the fun half of the program. We've got some more sound. We'll take phone calls, 646-257-3920. We'll take your IMs and be back in just a moment.
Hey, so we take one. La poupée qu'il fait non.
Fuck off.
We'll be right back. says no, 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 no. Just a little dog, and she knows I love her so. If I ask her to walk with me, she shakes her head. Oh,